Welcome back, murder friends, to
Under the Influence of True Crime. That's Kate, and she's telling our story.
And that's Em, and they're under the influence.
Not this time, but in future episodes, probably.
Amazing. They're at their office, in their defense. They've been working.
I'm off the clock, and the office is closed. I'm only here for the Wi-Fi.
We appreciate good business measures. Yeah,
absolutely.
Great. And we appreciate good internet, so...
For sure.
Okay, some business that we were gonna cover and also probably explain why we didn't have an episode last week, because as you saw from the caption, it was 100% Kate. I have relocated in my life and I am now no longer long distance with the BF. You know, yeah, so that's also why our audio might be a little bit funky. We're still processing some things, but I think that everything should be Gucci and, you know, good to go. So, yeah. Do you have any news that you would like to share?
I don't think so. I think I'm good.
Awesome. Do you just want to get started with our trigger warning?
Yeah, go for it.
Cool. So I just already want to apologize to everyone in the entire world for this trigger warning that's about to happen. It is literally the worst and grossest.
I don't even know what case we're doing, I don't think.
Oh, I'm sorry. Would you like to know or do you want to guess from the trigger warning?
Yeah.
I'll you want to play that game? Okay. Yeah. Okay, great. I believe in you. If anyone can do this, it's you.
I'm ready.
Okay. It's literally the worst and grossest case that we have ever covered. And it features rape, incest, drugging, murder, kidnapping, dismemberment of a child, I am so sorry, domestic violence, and abuse.
What state are we in? Besides distress. What country are we in?
Yes.
Canada. Interesting.
I will say that I believe that this duo is credited with being some of the most horrific serial killers in Canadian history.
I'm trying to remember Canadians. Where? I have one person, I have a duo in mind, but I don't think they were Canadian.
Where are we at with duos?
My initial thought was Ian Brady and Meyer Henry.
Oh, really? My first, whenever I think duo, is always Jeremy Stankey and Jasmine. It's neither of those two couples.
Interesting.
It's one that I was personally very excited for as my first two-parter.
Yeah. Ugh.
I was like, is it on the tip of your tongue at all? It is the case of Carla Homolka.
Oh, I knew that. Damn it.
And Paul Bernardo.
Damn it. I knew that.
Yeah, they knew it. They knew that too. Because I've definitely said it. But
it's been a very long 2 weeks, guys, so I'm not here.
Totally get it.
Okay, I've broken into a coworker's office, and I now have multiple STEM choice options.
May I please see the array?
Okay, we've got a light blue Play-Doh.
Classic.
Mm-hmm. We've got some thinking putty that I'm still not sure how I feel about it. Also, for
what
those
is the difference?
Home, one is
for our radio viewers, as Em loves to say,
for the benefit of the radio. This thinking putty is also light blue. The difference is the texture.
To be clear, the first one was probably more in like the teal turquoise range.
Yeah,
this is definitely blue. The texture, what is happening?
This one's like thick and like. You can, like, it's
it
thick.
Like jelly. Like,
it is kind of. And then, like, Play-Doh, obviously, is,
like a thick, moldable jelly.
Yeah. And, like, the texture. So, like,
is it just, like if you make it into a ball right now and you just, like, let it sit, is it going to, like, sink back into itself?
Let's try. I don't think so. No, it's, like, pretty thick.
So, it is, like, Play-Doh, just jello.
It's, like, Play-Doh, but, like, okay, have you ever played with, like, slime that's been overactivated? That's what this is, basically. Okay. It's very thick and like not pliable.
Why do I feel like you know that from your years of PLA activities?
I sure do. And also, yeah, that's exactly right. And like Play-Doh is just better. And then I also have, I don't know what the classic STEM
a squiggly toy, yeah, the squigglies.
Of a little squiggly guy for the benefit of the radio. It's like one of those little like snake guys with the segments. Any of my other like neurodivergents?
It's that one that you can pull apart and they come in different colors.
Yeah,
but it's like kind of hard to pull them apart.
Oh, yeah, I broke 1,000 of them the other day. Literally any neurodivergent person, when I say STEM toy, it's probably the first thing that comes to mind.
The OG.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Well, I love that we have those now. In my terrible case that we must unfortunately return to, they were stalling everyone.
I was, yeah. I also desperately needed STEM toys.
No, that's fair. You definitely don't want to come into this body empty and handed. But yeah, so I think I covered everything that I need to in the trigger warning. Obviously, if I don't, I will stop and address it. But I went back several times and added several things, including the apology, just because I'm very sorry.
This is another one that I really don't know very well. I think I've heard one episode of on it.
Morbids, probably.
Yeah, so... Yeah, I'm excited.
Well, so at first when I was doing the research for this one, I was like, oh, I don't really know why Morbid did two parts. Like, I feel like I can do it in one. And then I kept going and I kept going and I kept going. And suddenly everything was clear. And I was just shocked that Elena didn't do three parts because she's brilliant and right. It just, you know, dedicated. So anyway, we'll see what we've got here. We might just have two medium-sized episodes. Here we go. I am probably going to focus a little bit more on the Carla side because, and I'm going to address this later as well, but she's not really considered to be the main person or the mastermind, but like I fully believe that she is the more evil of the two people and that right. She is a monster. And so I just wanted to preface everything with that I think she's a lot more a part of this, I guess, than she's gotten credit for.
Yeah.
You know. So Carla was born in 1970. She is a serial killer and rapist that was born in Ontario, Canada, and she paired up with a man named Paul Bernardo, and they're known to rape and kill at least three known minors between 1990 and 1992. So Paul Bernardo is a garbage monster as well, and they together were a nightmare for every underage girl in Canada. Paul was born in 1964. He was a serial rapist before he met Carla Homolka, and he is responsible for the Scarborough rapist crimes. Those were a series of rapes in Scarborough, Ontario, a suburb of Toronto. And these crimes happened between 1987 and 1990 before he switched to partner rapes with literal human trash Carla Homolka.
I agree.
So Paul and Carla began dating in 1987, and they took an instant liking to each other, like an uncomfortable instant sexual liking to each other, which is a quote.
Gross.
Paul wasn't used to girls really liking when he was a creep with them, whereas Carla encouraged his sadistic sexual behavior and is part of the reason why he got as bad as he did, because she was like, yes, that's a great idea. Homolka was still in high school when she started meeting him, but she knew she was destined to spend the rest of her life with this man. When Paul asked her what she would think if he were a rapist, she said it would only make him cooler in her eyes, which is not the appropriate response, in case anyone was like, no, curious.
How did you even start that conversation?
Yeah, I know. You're, like, sitting, like, having, like, a casual, like, dinner and movie night with your boyfriend. He, like, looks over at you and he's like, hey, babe. So, like, do you want to play the what if game? Like, a fun what if.
And that's the first thing.
What if I was a rapist? And she's like, what? I'm into it. Thumbs down, Carla.
I agree.
Carla and Paul developed a shared taste for sadomasochism, with Paul being the master and Carla being the slave. Also gross. An uncomfortable dynamic. Yes. In 1990, they got engaged, and Carla's family really liked Paul, so he spent more and more time there. And by 1990, I mean 1989. In 1989, they got engaged. Thank you all for coming to my TED Talk. In the summer of 1990, he really became a creep and started telling Carla he was attracted to her 15-year-old sister, Tammy, and started asking if he could
help. Oh my God. Okay.
My whole heart just jumped out of my body. I know that was you. Sorry. Remembering the case.
Yeah.
Jesus, dude.
Yeah, it was, yes. As soon as you said Tammy.
It is that case. So he started asking if he could have Tammy's virginity like it was Carla's to give away.
Or that it was a tangible thing that isn't fake.
Right. So he'd also lost his job as an accountant, and he was smuggling cigarettes across the U.S.-Canadian border. In case you were like, what's he doing? And he did it with a partner whose actual legal name was Van. I just needed you to know that.
Okay. He sounds like a chill dude.
Yeah, I would say probably, yeah. So, of course, he didn't mention this to Carla's family, but I'm really sure that Carla at least knew that he was doing this, because, like, what was she going to do? Be like, I'm not okay with you not having a job and smuggling cigarettes, but like, you being a rapist is cool. Like, she was so stinking into it. She would have just been like, that's fine. Right. You sell them cigarettes. His obsession with Tammy grew, and he would continue to be a creep, peeking through her window and entering her room while she was asleep to masturbate.
Ew.
And I'm calling the police over that because that's awful. And Carla, because she's a great big sister, broke Tammy's windows, allowing him better access to watch her or get into the room because, of course, that's how you treat your siblings.
Don't like that.
Yeah, you shouldn't. He would also have Carla dress up and act like Tammy during sex so he could pretend it was Tammy. In July, he took Tammy across the border for beer and for like a party. And he told Carla later that they had gotten drunk and just began making out. And Morbid's Ash asked the really good question of like, why didn't he just have sex with her right then or whatever? Like, it seemed like she would have like been down.
Wait, how old was he at this point?
64 to 90.
Okay. 26.
So, and she was like, well, why didn't he just do whatever right then? But it seemed like he really wanted Carla's permission for the virginity thing. And seemed like he also wanted a less willing Tammy. Like, you know, he enjoyed the aspect. Right,
that was the appeal of it, was that...
Right, that she wasn't consenting. Like, right. He was asking her older sister for it. So that July, Carla stole some drugs from the vet office where she was working. She spiked a plate of spaghetti that she made for Tammy with Valium. So he's like, why spaghetti? Like, what a weird dish.
Spaghetti's like my favorite comfort meal. Like, I want spaghetti so bad right now. Not like drugged or anything.
Not Valium spiked spaghetti.
Yeah, but like, I've just like had such a bad week that I'm just like, damn, I want some spaghetti.
That's fair, actually. So apparently it wasn't abnormal for Carla to make dinner for Tammy. You know, she's her big sister. Like, that's something your sister does for you occasionally. And so, you know, she took the plate. She didn't think anything weird was coming from her big sister. And naturally, Tammy went unconscious. And this is like from Paul. Unfortunately, he was only able to rape Tammy for about 1 minute before she started to wake up. Oh, no.
Dang it. That sucks.
I know. So... they chilled out for a bit, and by they, I mean she did, because he was still doing his creepy stuff as a Scarborough rapist. But Carla decided she wanted to give Paul Tammy's virginity for Christmas.
Okay.
Yeah. No. That's disgusting. So this time, Carla took Halothane from the vet clinic, and on December 23rd, they drugged her by putting it in her eggnog. They had all been at a family Christmas party, and when everyone else went to bed, they invited Tammy to come down to the basement to drink with them. And why would she not want to? Your older sibling, could you imagine? You're fucking 15 and David goes, hey, I'm gonna come drink some fucking eggnog with me and my girlfriend.
Right. No.
We would have lost our minds. We'd have been
literally
heartbeat.
We would have
been
like,
in the basement. Where are you at?
Literally, we would have been there. Like,
oh my God, if Mark would have offered me, yeah. Oh, forget about it. No, there's no way I wouldn't have been there. And Tammy really thought Paul was a cool dude. She was like, my sister's fiance is such a nice guy.
Right.
Not Tammy. Anyway.
Yeah.
All right. So Tammy obviously was down to go to the basement with them. She was pumped up. She was like, oh, drinking with my older sibling? Hell yeah. And, you know, she's 15. She's pumped up. So, like I said, they spiked Tammy's eggnog, but because they are an actual sack of dicks, they neglected to do any kind of dosing, and they just poured Halothane into her eggnog. She naturally went unconscious, and Paul began raping Tammy while Carla recorded it on his camera. Because,
ew.
Yeah, this isn't something I mentioned, but apparently Paul was, like, always recording stuff. And the detectives say the video literally goes from him recording the Homolka Christmas dinner and, like, being like, yay, with my family, ha ha ha, to him raping Tammy in the basement. Like,
love that.
No cut, anything. And this, I'm so sorry, everyone. It's about to get really gross, and just buckle up. So Paul then took the camera from Carla and told her how hot it would be if she raped Tammy. And so this was when a normal person would obviously, you know, they would have never gotten this far. But surely she was like, you know, like, yeah, that's crazy, right?
No.
No.
Totally normal.
Yeah. So not only does she rape Tammy, her younger sister, on camera, but she holds a halothane-covered cloth to her face anytime she starts, like, kind of stirring. So she and Paul take turns raping Tammy and recording it.
Jesus.
And at this point, Tammy has ingested a bananas amount of halothane, and now she's inhaling it. It's touching her skin, like her bare skin. And naturally, she begins to vomit. And instead of, like, you know, turning her head or doing anything that's, like, helpful, they calmly got her dressed and took her back to her room before they called 911. They had to have, you know, all the evidence hidden first, but they couldn't get rid of the nasty chemical burn across one entire side of Tammy's face from the cellophane rag. And when the police got there, the ambulance took Tammy away and pronounced her dead on arrival at St. Catherine's General Hospital because she never regained consciousness.
Jesus.
Yeah, Paul said he had tried to revive her and failed, and the death of Tammy Homolka was officially ruled an accident.
Of course it was.
And Morbid talked about how when the police asked about the burn on her face, they literally said it was a rug burn because Paul had to drag her back to her room. Why were you dragging her, Paul?
And also, like, there's ways to test that.
Well, and also, like, if you're, you know, a professional, you'd think you'd know the difference between a chemical burn and a rug burn because I don't feel like they look the same.
Right.
And so this was after they had claimed she got too drunk and started going crazy before vomiting and going unconscious.
Did they not do a toxicology report?
Nope, because they just took the word of her older sister. They were like, why would these two be killers? They get away with so much because of their, like, good looks, because they literally have such pretty privilege in terms of people being like, they wouldn't do that. No way. Those nice kids.
Right.
Crazy. So her death was ruled an accident. Obviously it wasn't. We're very upset that it could even have been considered that. And only a few weeks later, about three, Paul and Carla filmed The Fireside Chats, which is really stupid and annoying because if you guys know anything about history, like I happen to, The Fireside Chats were a series of evening radio addresses given by Franklin D. Roosevelt between 1933 and 1944. So it's annoying that they called their creepy, gross rape saga that.
Yeah.
Anyway, while in their version, though, they recorded stuff as disgusting and appalling and gross. But one good thing about all of this recorded stuff is it was all used against them in court because,
right,
you know, idiots.
You're doing illegal stuff. Why are you recording it?
I don't understand the thought process there. Anyway, their fireside chat included them in the basement where they killed Tammy, where Carla says she enjoyed when Paul was raping Tammy and that she wanted to do it every weekend, which is gross.
Just a nice little weekend activity.
You know, some people go camping. Not them. They moved the chat into Tammy's room where Carla dressed up like Tammy and they began having sex on Tammy's bed, which is just disrespectful.
That's just gross in and of itself, even if you don't look at anything else that's happened already.
Right? It was like, just don't fucking do that. Carla took a red rose and rubbed it all over Paul's junk and like his entire body. And then she said she wanted to take it to Tammy's grave because she knew he'd like leaving it for her there.
Ew.
And that's also where I'm calling the police. One article talked about how Paul was really unhappy about Tammy's death and blamed Carla for it. So Carla was like, I know what I'll do to make it up to him. I'll kidnap another underage girl as a gift. Okay. So she brought in Jane Doe as an apology and a present. She wanted to bring Paul other young girls, so she lured a 15-year-old she worked with previously at a pet shop. She invited her out in June of 1991 to a girls' night out, and the girl went really excited. She was like, hell yeah, an older colleague of mine wanting to hang out. Incredible. Which is weird. Don't, if you're 15, don't do that.
No.
So Carla invited the girl back to her house for a couple drinks, which Carla spiked, and then delivered her to Paul as a surprise and a present. So this
that's what humans are.
Yeah, right. I was like, that's fine. So this whole time Paul was videotaping because instead Carla began raping the young girl before Paul took over and assaulted her as well. Yeah, it was positive overall.
What a great gift.
So the girl briefly stopped breathing while she was being assaulted and they called 911 only to call back a few minutes later saying everything was all right because they had gotten her revived. And because it was 1991, no follow-up was made. The ambulance was told to just turn around.
That makes no sense.
Yeah, that was just like fine.
Like even if someone had to get revived, like they still need to go get medical attention.
I know. I was like, that didn't change anything. Especially if you call and you're like, oh, a 15-year-old is unconscious. Like, that's a child. Someone help the child.
Right.
So the next morning, the girl was throwing up, but she just assumed it was because the night before had been her first night drinking. So she never even knew she was assaulted.
Oh.
At least not at first. She would be told later once the videotapes were uncovered, which I think is upsetting.
Which that happened in the Toy Box Killer also.
Yeah, was that, remember the, that? Was that the tattoo one?
That was the one with the tattoo.
Okay.
Yeah, where they released a picture trying to find it, and it was she didn't even know it was her until she saw her own tattoo. Yeah.
Yeah, so they found this video, and I'm assuming they contacted her parents. I don't even know how you make a decision whether or not to, like, tell that human being that, because that's earth-shattering.
Right.
But also her right to know.
Right.
This girl is obviously just known as Jane Doe for her identity's sake. It never got, like, came to light who she was or anything like that, which is positive. So literally a week later, Paul and Carla found another victim. This time it was 14-year-old Leslie Mahaffey. Paul was cruising the area looking for license plates to steal because of his cigarette smuggling business, and he noticed her. She had been dropped off really late by her friends because they were at a wake for another friend, and she discovered that her front door was locked, but she told him to just go ahead because she was sure that a side door or something would be unlocked. Unfortunately, since it was a little past 2 a.m., Leslie had missed her curfew, and her parents had locked all the doors in an effort to teach her a lesson.
Did you say she was coming home from a wake?
Yeah, like a...
That's not the time to teach your kid a lesson.
I know. Her friend had died suddenly, and so after the wake, she was with friends, like, literally grieving, I'm sure. And so they were out till 2 a.m., and they dropped her off. And they were like, well, it's time to teach you a lesson about your curfew, even though your friend died.
A-plus parenting.
Yeah, and like I said, I hate that I keep quoting Morbid, but I don't want anyone to, like, listen to this and be like, Morbid said that, because, like, I know they did. They made a very good point. So Morbid described it best by saying it's unimaginable how those parents must feel now, because, you know, obviously there's no way they could have known, but, like, I'm glad
there was
now
also,
maybe we don't do that.
But, like, it's also, like, the Bryce case, like, it didn't have to happen.
True. Like, literally, you could have just been like, you could have just been waiting up or something when she got inside the door and been like, you're actually in a lot of trouble and you're going to learn your lesson tomorrow with the amount of yard work you have to do. Like, don't leave your child locked out in the middle of the night. That's insane.
After a friend's funeral.
That's a very key detail to take into account. Because it's not like she was out partying and getting drunk and being crazy.
Even if she was.
True.
She deserves to be able to do that.
True. Well, don't drink and party and go out with your friends at 14.
Well, no. But also, if you're like, if my friend just died, I'm going to be drinking.
Oh, that's true. No, that's really fair.
At 14, we were sitting in your parents' basement watching Fired Up and eating ramen.
I'm sorry. Did you describe a month ago?
Literally.
Like, that's on brand still.
Oh, excuse me. At 14, we were watching Fired Up, followed very closely by Video Diaries.
Yeah, it was like any video of One Direction on YouTube. Yeah, like, yeah. It didn't even have to be just be Video Diaries. That was just
a One Direction funny moment compilation.
They were featured in anything. We're like, oh, the Chatty Man Show.
The Adventures of One Direction.
God. Tacos.
I'll have the tacos, please. That's not a breakfast food. It is now. Introducing tacos.
Ah, it's aged beautifully.
Beef flavored O's in the taco shell.
This is going to be one of those horrible jumps, but I got to do it. I got to jump back in it.
I'm ready.
So, unfortunately, in case you're wondering, we were at her parents locking her out of her own home. That's where we were, upsettingly. So that night, unfortunately, Paul had been cruising around and he noticed Leslie from his car window. And because he's a pedophile, he was like, ah, a young teen. And he pulled out and got out of the car and approached her. Apparently, she was really unfazed and asked him for a cigarette. I've heard some, like, mixed things where, like, he offered her one from, like, the car. I was like, hey, you want a cigarette? And she, like, approached. And then I've heard one where he approached her and then she was like, do you have a cigarette? And they walked back because she was just, like, pissed off at her parents, which is relatable. But don't take cigarettes from strangers, kids, also. This has just become your neighborhood-friendly PSAs with Kate and
Ron. Right, this is not Mr. Rogers' neighborhood. This is...
How not to... Like, they're Morbid's, like, lock your windows. And we're like... Don't accept cigarettes from strangers.
Just don't do anything that involves men and you'll be fine.
That's not wrong. But this show also is teaching you that women are also unsafe.
That's also true, yeah. Just don't trust anybody.
No trust. Just, you know, trust your animal friends because they know what's up. Anyway, she asked him for a cigarette. And like I said, I always thought he just like creeped up on her and asked her, but whatever, shit. When he led her back to the car, she approached and he grabbed her and drove her to his and Carla's house. Because don't forget, they're living together. Carla was evidently delighted because they spent the night repeatedly raping and torturing Leslie while videotaping it. And while David Bowie and Bob Marley played in the background while they abused the poor girl. So
what a good soundtrack.
Yeah, I know. It's like a really chill vibe for what you're doing. So this videotape is apparently so bad that it was deemed too graphic and disturbing to show at the trial. But the audio was allowed, and it was also still very disturbing and uncomfortable. The audio is really uncomfortable with a couple quotes. I'm only going to hurt you guys with like two or three. A couple quotes like, "You're doing a good job, Leslie. The next 2 hours are going to determine what I do to you."
Ew.
And you can hear him ordering Leslie to submit to him while she cries in pain. And unfortunately, at one point, her blindfold starts to slip and she's like, "Hey, my blindfold is slipping," because she doesn't want to get fucked up either. And they realize she could potentially identify them. This is when Paul and Carla decided to commit their first intentional murder. Although arguments could be made about Carla and Tammy, given evidence discovered later that we're going to circle back to, on intentionality and whether Leslie was the first.
Right. Okay.
Stay tuned. So Carla began drugging Leslie, which wasn't abnormal, you know, so Leslie was kind of expecting that, but she gave her well over a lethal dose of the drug Halcyon, which is the same one she had used apparently in Tammy's eggnog. I had misspoke.
Do you remember when I accidentally said Visine instead of Vyvanse?
I do. And you remember when you blamed me for it in the cold open the next week?
I stand by that.
I don't. I didn't hear it. I also heard Vyvanse. So she also claimed that Paul strangled Leslie, but it seems like Paul was just a nasty serial rapist and that she was the murdering asshole. Because,
well, let's be clear, none of them are good.
No, true, but it seems like she was the one who was murdering the women that he was attracted to because they weren't like her. Because later Paul like talks about how he was like, "No, I never wanted to kill any of them. Like, I really liked having them in the house." And I was like, "You're a disgusting creep. Like, that's gross." So they kept Leslie's body in the basement while they had the Homolka family over for dinner, which was her mom, her dad, and the remaining daughter, Lori. And that was a day after. So they killed this human being. And then the next day they were like, "Oh, guests, a dinner party."
Fantastic. That's like that, I don't remember what his name is, but that one who killed his parents and then had a house party.
Oh, like, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. I know. And he's like, just like, "Don't go in that room." Ha-ha.
I think his name was Tyler or something like that.
I don't think you're wrong. That sounds on brand for what happened. Although you could have said any white boy name and I would have been like, "Yeah,
that's
probably."
Yeah.
But you'd be like, "Adam." I'd be like,
Yeah, that's it.
Jason. Sure. Forget about it. Justin. That makes sense. Anyway, they decided after Carla's family left that they should probably do something with Leslie's body. So they began brainstorming a little bit, and they decided that the best method would be dismembering her and encasing each body part in cement.
Yeah, that seems super easy.
I don't know what movies they were watching, but like,
that ain't it.
I just feel, and you can say if I'm wrong, but I feel like from the Black Dahlia that we've learned that dismemberment is only successful if you start with desanguination. And like, where are you going to put it?
And like, if you actually know what you're doing.
Well, that's like also true. But like, there's a lot of blood in a person.
There really is. Yeah.
And it stains rather effectively, I dare say.
Yeah. It's not a good idea.
So Paul went to the hardware store to purchase bags of cement, which they used to put dismembered parts of Leslie in. In total, he bought about 12 bags of cement, but the dumb fuck kept the receipts and they were used at his trial.
Write off on taxes? Or
he, probably. He was like, "I'm going to put this down for sure." Well, they were used later in his trial, in case you were curious.
Let's just keep all... That's like when, like, Dennis Rader burned everything but then wrote it in great detail in his diary.
And kept it in his hidey hole.
Because that's not going to be...
Evidence?
Yeah.
He's like, well, I just was... It was a fictional story. Dennis, that matched exactly what happened at a crime, like, just down the street, actually. Well, like,
I don't remember... I don't exactly remember it, but it was like the fireman who was like committing arson all over town and writing fictional stories about it.
O.J. Simpson.
Do you remember that?
Yeah. If I killed everyone.
Didn't kill her, but if I was going to.
Yeah, I do know what you're talking about. I think that's awesome when people like do that and they're like, I will profit hypothetically if I were to do this. And we're like, you did it. Like that was concise.
Like, that's, yep.
You said it.
I don't get it.
I kind of want to read that book of OJ's just to be like, what do you just have to say, see what, sir?
Yeah. Like, just to see what's up.
Because, like, is it actually, do you think, like, how hilarious would that be if it's actually just, like, a 200-page, like, fucking confession?
That's
like,
exactly what it is.
Get away with it. Like, I don't know. I just can't.
Right.
Anyway. So they took these cement blocks with Leslie's body in them and dumped them into the local lake, which was Lake Gibson, in case any of our Canadian listeners are like, hey, what's up? Anyway, one of these would actually, and this is apparently because of the weights and like the distribution and like, how, I don't know. Anyway, I'm not a doctor. Anyway, one of these would eventually wash up on the shore in June of 1991, which had an orthodontic implant, which identified the body as Leslie Mahaffey. And as the couple's third victim, even though she was actually the second, she wouldn't be linked to them for a while. So the next one is their like main one, I guess, technically. Also, how unbelievably lucky that of the cement blocks to wash up, it was one with her orthodontic implant in it.
Yeah, that's like they, all of those, and that's the one.
Like, truly lucky. That's like an amputee, like, being like, my prosthetic washed up with my, right. Like, wow.
With like the serial number. Yeah.
Exactly. So, okay. Yeah. And so with the horrible, horrible death of Leslie Mahaffey, I am going to end everyone's suffering for this episode.
Just for a second, though.
Yeah, but the good news is we'll have the part two out in just a couple days, and you'll all be able to continue your torture. That's all that I have for you today. Do you have anything else you want to add?
Nope, that was it.
All right, cool.
Thank you so much for listening. If you want to see pictures from this case, you can follow our Instagram.
At Under the Influence of True Crime.
You can join our Facebook group.
At Under the Influence of True Crime.
You can follow our Twitter that I haven't posted on yet.
At Under True Crime.
Yes, Jay-Z followed it, by the way.
Oh, Jay-Z.
Jay-Z's our first follower. I haven't posted anything for them yet. Anyway, you can also send us an email.
At Under the Influence of True Crime. @gmail.com.
And you can also rate, review, and subscribe.
Anywhere you listen to your podcast, and we really appreciate when you do that.
You can also join us right back here next time for some more
spooky tales.
Okay, bye.
So long, good night.
Take it to Grandma.